Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about the books we'd like to recommend.
And Sabrina and one of her friends, Michaela, is joining us today. This is Michaela's first time on the show.
That's true.
But this is a very special show because for the first time ever in our podcast history, all four of us are going to talk about the same book.
We've got a quad show.
Yes, and it is basically in honor of Midnight Sun, which was released on August 4th of this year. Very, very anticipated by Twilight fans. I don't know if anybody remembers, but way back in the day when Twilight was popular, a manuscript of Midnight Sun was actually leaked on the internet, and it threw Stephanie Meyer into a huff where she abandoned the series for a long time afterward. So she has revisited it with Midnight Sun, but we felt like it would be important to catch up on all the nostalgia from our first reading of Twilight. So Sabrina, how about you tell us about how you first discovered the series. You can say how old you were or however you want to do it. It'll age you a little bit.
I'm so pumped for this episode. Thanks for letting us be here. Okay, so the first time I read Twilight was like seventh grade, middle school. I was a very avid reader. I read a ton. And I was looking for something different and everyone was talking about Twilight. So I'm pretty sure I just picked it up and was like, okay, let's go for it. And then I came back school the next day and was like, is there more? And that went from there. I was pretty obsessed with the books. I think I may have even reread them a couple times in middle school, but then when Breaking Dawn was released in eighth grade, I went to the midnight premiere. I was like, oh, I'm getting this book. I woke up the next morning and I read it in 8 hours. I was thrilled. So yeah, I was a diehard fan. I loved it. But Michaela, my best friend for many, many years here, she also read it in middle school, right?
Yeah. So like most of the books that I got really addicted to in middle school, I got it from Sabrina. She's read so much that she kind of screened them out for me and told me which ones were good. And so I started reading Twilight, got equally obsessed with it. Our whole friend group just loved the books.
Yep.
To all end. And one of our friends actually got a haircut to look like one of the characters in the movie because we were all just so excited about Twilight. Yeah, I was able to see all the movies.
I was not. I think that's a good time to say. I was not allowed to see the movies.
So. I got my mom hooked on it. And so.
Yeah, it was a mess.
So, Katie, what about you? And then I'll share my story and put myself as the oldest person in this room.
So, I was a little bit older than you when I read it. I was in high school, I believe. Younger high school, probably. I can't remember exactly. It all blends together. But I remember it, same thing. I got it. I was like, oh my God, this is the be all end all of books. This is so good. This is quality. I was such a big fan of it that I remember, again, reading it with a group of friends, and I also read an article in the school paper that another student had written about how Twilight was misogynist. And I remember being so angry and indignant as a little, like, ninth grader. I was just like, how dare you? You're just saying that because you don't like us. Like, and I was so fiery. And turns out I maybe agree with that 11th grader that wrote that article.
So I'm definitely the old timer in here. I was actually working as the teen librarian when it came out. So I did my, I don't know, teen librarian duty and picked up the book and read it. I have always been like one of those horror kind of goth type people. So I liked the original, like, Dracula. I always liked really gory stuff. I was very angry to read about sparkly vampires. But I found the series to at least be compulsively readable. And I mostly did it just so I could understand what the teens were getting into.
Yeah, especially because it was such a thing.
We also had so many people on staff that were obsessed that for the Twilight release, a whole bunch of us got tickets to the same showing. And we all took up, like, two rows of the movie theater to go and watch it. And I rolled my eyes every time all the other ladies there were just going every time, like, Edward came on the screen. So I managed to at least not sneer or anything, but I definitely rolled my eyes a lot.
That's awesome. So we've got a few different perspectives here. Let's talk a little bit about, it'll be hard with four people, but a little bit about maybe what we're seeing now looking back, like, at the things that we read then.
Or even
pros and cons.
I think, have both of you guys reread it?
Yes.
Because that's something we have not done, I don't think.
Have not. I skimmed, like, plot outlines and stuff, but I did not reread it.
Yeah. So
you reread it.
I reread it because I'm a read a book once and then never pick it up kind of person.
Me too.
I reread it and I was absolutely shocked about how manipulative and abusive the relationship mm-hmm. between Bella and Edward were. And I remember idolizing this relationship, like, oh, this is what love is, like, this is what I should look up to.
What do you think as a kid made, because I felt the same way, so just for your perspective, what do you think made you think about this relationship, like, oh, this is a good relationship?
It was just the reiteration of how much they loved each other, I think.
Yeah.
Because it says it so many times, oh, I just love him so much, or oh, he just loves her mm-hmm. so much. And then the behaviors that I took as protective or really caring were actually behaviors of stalking and manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those patterns that now as an ER nurse, I see it in my patients that come in with abusive relationships, or even teenagers that come in and disclose this information to me, and they don't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
Interestingly, when I read the books the first time, I was reading it as an adult. I'd already had some really toxic, controlling relationships that were behind me. So the entire time I was like, Edward's a creep, yo. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was as a ninth grader, like this idea that I guess is also in the rest of media as well, like other books and other movies, but it's very clear in this book that love is obsession. Like, you have to be 100% invested in someone. You can't spend time apart because that means you like other things better than them.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of that idea that I think teenage girls in particular are very
susceptible to.
Yeah, like this idea that someone needs to be invested in me and want to value me more than anything else in the world.
When I read it as like an adult now, I thought back to like the toxic relationships that I've been in and how I very much took that mentality that if they didn't want to spend every moment of their time with me, then I wasn't enough. Like, they didn't, you know, I had to do more. I had to be more likable. I had to be more lovable. And I had to transform myself into that, whether that means like canceling on friends to be at their beck and call, or, you know, changing my plans so that I could be there if in case he called or he wanted to go do something. And so I think that this really changed the way that I look at relationships as an adult and makes me think that I really fantasized about what love was in a really unhealthy way as a child. I say child, a teenager.
Yeah, someone still, who maybe hasn't had a lot of relationship experience but is looking towards the future.
Exactly.
And then fantasizing about it in, you know, young adult novels.
Yeah.
And then you get in this relationship, and I think I accepted more behaviors that were completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
Because I thought that's what love was, and that's what I should expect from someone who cares about me. And that's just not the case.
And it's not like Jacob was any better. Let's talk a little bit about that, too.
Yeah.
Team Edward or Team Jacob, and they're both terrible.
I'm about Team Bella. Bella needs to help herself.
I personally wanted Bella to trip off a cliff, but that would have been a very short series.
It would.
So. Yeah. She tried to in the second book.
That's true. So how did y'all feel about Jacob in the book when you first read it? Were you Team Edward or Team Jacob?
For New Moon, I was definitely still Team Edward, but I liked that Jacob was a good friend.
I was hardcore Team Jacob.
Yeah. You were. That's right.
We had many hour-long conversations.
You're right. Yeah, that's totally right. Yeah.
I remember thinking the same thing. I really appreciated in the second book as a kid the idea that Jacob was still there, although I kept getting mad, and this is actually like a healthy boundary, I kept getting mad that he kept trying to be with her, because even little kid me was like, no, she's obviously like still hurting, like why do you keep trying to pick her up? Like,
yeah,
just be her friend, Jacob. But clearly I was not a Team Jacob. I'm sorry that you're outnumbered so far.
That's fine.
I have a feeling that Leslie is Team neither one.
Yeah. I was Team go find yourself.
So what about her relationship with Jacob? What do you think? Was that healthier? Was it still the same amount of...
And I even kind twisted? Of want to add to that question. Do you think that she even gave them even playing fields when it comes to... Because she built it up like a triangle.
But it was like a... What's the triangle that's like a really tiny angle on one side?
Yeah. I saw something.
It was that triangle where Jacob had maybe like a 30% chance as opposed to 70% on Edward's... And that's only because Edward disappeared for a book.
Yeah. I feel like in the first book, Jacob was not manipulative. I feel like he came across as like a genuine friend who maybe had some interest in her, but wasn't trying to manipulate her point of view or anything. Whereas in that same book, though, you see her manipulate him in order to get more information about Edward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that kind of started that unhealthy relationship that we then see develop into the next books.
And I feel like for a lot of people in these books, becoming a werewolf is not good. Everyone that you see become a werewolf is suddenly the worst person. Like, so rude and so, like, entitled. And you're just like, okay, so I liked Jacob before, but now he's just kind of, like, mean.
But, I mean, for the most part, that's true of the vampires. You just happen to meet the vegan vampires first.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't see that transformation of someone who you're introduced to suddenly, like, completely changing with the vampires. You just see them all as they are, so they seem, like, immovable almost, like the same thing.
This may be a little off topic, but do y'all remember Sam? And his girlfriend,
yes.
She had the huge scar from where he had, like, completely attacked her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were still married. Like, it was all hunky-dory. Everything's
and,
fine.
And wasn't their backstory that she didn't want to be with him? He turned her into a werewolf against her will. And she was like, oh, now I get it. Now I'm imprinted. So
something
now
like
I like
that.
You. Yeah, it was this very, like, weird, I won't even say manipulative, because it wasn't even manipulative. He, like, straight up, like, abducted her and, like, werewolf brain controlled her into wanting to be with him.
It's interesting that you said imprint, because I don't know about anybody else, but I was very uncomfortable with Breaking Dawn and the whole imprinting situation. Oh. Like, I
even as a kid, I was just kid, like, this is gross.
Yeah,
like, I was like, you're trying to create a thin line to walk, and it's just not there.
It's, but there is an entire theme throughout all four books of this imbalance of power in relationships, and you've got somebody who's way older than. The girl that he's pursuing, and it feels inappropriate.
Yeah.
In any other situation, stronger, it would basically be labeled like pedophilia or something.
Yeah. If he hadn't been transformed into a vampire
young
at
looking
that age,
on the outside.
He was 180-something years old hitting on a 17-year-old.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, just the way it was played off in Breaking Dawn, like this whole, like, oh, I was never in love with you, Bella. I was in love with one of your eggs. and I felt like they tried to age the baby, Renesmee, which is its own issue, up really quickly to kind of, like, make it seem less gross. Like, maybe if she's aging really quickly, people won't think about the fact that this man has been in her life as a full-grown adult for, like, 16 to 18 years. No, it's fine. She'll be an adult in 5 years. Is that not worse?
Well,
because
then he becomes
a five-year-old. Right.
And then he becomes Uncle Husband, which is also kind of troublesome.
The way they tried to describe it to, like, play it off is that there's, like, the switch in his brain where when she becomes legal, I guess, then his brain will be like, ah, now I'm romantically attracted to her. Before, it was just familial.
It's like they were trying so hard to bridge, like, the vampires and werewolves together into, like, this new, but it just
doesn't work. It's a prequel to Underworld.
Well, and I also think that really she was trying to give Jacob, like,
a happy ending.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Because resolved Edward and Bella's story, and I guess she didn't want to just leave him, like, hanging.
I'm going to give you a little tip, listeners. A happy ending does not necessarily mean that you get someone as a partner.
I know. As a reward is what you're about to say, and that's what it feels like.
Yeah, because you're like, Jake has been so nice. He hasn't pushed, except he has. And he hasn't been mean, except he has. So he really deserves a happy ending of his own. What if we just make him a baby?
Yeah.
That he can marry later.
Oh my gosh. Just thinking back now and how obsessed I was the day I was reading it. And then even when I got done, I was like, that's weird, but it's okay. It's fantasy.
Yeah.
Like,
when you guys first read through Breaking Dawn, which I always want to call Breaking Bad, and I have to stop myself. When you first read Breaking Dawn, did it feel like a satisfactory conclusion to the series?
Ooh.
I read it as a satisfactory conclusion because I felt like the relationship I'd idolized was now set in stone forever, and they would never leave each other's side for the rest of eternity.
They had a kid, so then, like, a happy little family.
Yeah, it,
like,
checked off all the boxes of have a relationship, get married, have a kid, be together forever.
Yeah.
And, like, as you're saying that, I'm realizing that these people don't have any other goals in life.
Yeah. No, they keep going to high school over and over again.
Yeah.
Which
she was supposed to go to college.
Yeah.
But
you saying that makes me think, like, it felt satisfactory to me because that was the only thing they ever wanted. They never wanted, like, a certain job or to, like, achieve anything in life other than being together.
To take over the vampire underworld or...
Yep. Even that, I would be like, oh, but we don't get to see what happens when Edward tries to take over the vampire underworld. It's not done. It felt done because that's the only thing that they ever wanted.
They ever worked towards. I mean, through all of the books, that is literally the only thing that they ever did.
And that just makes it so sad that you have, like, these characters and you don't know anything. Like, you think this girl is, like, 20, right? She's younger, maybe. But yeah, she's 20 and her life is done. That's, as far as we know, that's all that ever happens. It just stays the same forever now.
Yeah.
I'm creeped out now. Even more than before.
Which book was your favorite? Like, either at the time or even now in retrospect. Which one do you think was the...
I really liked Eclipse. Is that the one where the werewolves the and the vampires one, fight?
Yeah.
That's the one I really liked.
Right? Eclipse was the third one?
The third one.
I think I liked that one, too, because you started getting more world building. Like, Twilight was the first one, so it has, like, a special place in the series, I think. But Eclipse was where... I mean, it wasn't her weird fugue suicidal... state, which was its own level of gross manipulation. But it was like you guys started to get to see the wider world beyond them, and it was actually kind of interesting to like see what was happening.
I think I'm gonna have to agree on Eclipse being my favorite, because New Moon I just hated. I thought it was boring. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really off character from the first book. Like, we go from like, I do like love stories, so we go from like a passionate, like exciting love story
to someone like trying to
someone just like doing crazy wild things to kill themselves.
She's basically a shell of herself.
And
someone
just...
who becomes an adrenaline junkie so she can like hear his voice.
Yeah, and like she never treated Jacob right, I didn't feel like, so it was just like altogether I hated New Moon. I got to Eclipse and I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
and then Breaking Dawn I think felt like just left me very overwhelmed. Like, yes, I think I was satisfied with the ending, like we said, but I just, looking back now, like, I got done and I was like emotionally drained. Like, there was just too
much. So much happens.
Like, so much, because so much does happen. And then, you know, you go into, wow, like, the last 2 years I've been obsessing about this and now it's done. And so you have a little bit of book depression that's associated with, like, Breaking Dawn as a teen. So I think Eclipse was my favorite.
But then on the flip side, the reasons Eclipse was my favorite at the time was because of all the things that I have a problem with now. They were at their most intense. Like the manipulation was in terrible. There was the love triangle. That was the most intense part of that.
Mm-hmm.
True.
And those are the things I have an issue with now.
And now I feel like I have to read it and see what it's really like, because I feel like maybe my opinion of it is like so colored by like being a teen when I first read it that I don't actually remember what happened.
Yeah,
like when I reread Twilight, I breezed through it. Like, it was, because it's such an easy read.
Yes, it is.
But even as I was reading it again, I, as an adult, I just thought he sneered at her. Like, there's a point where like he's like talking so manipulatively at her and like talking down to her. Like, he's bad boy on steroids.
Yeah,
and I think back to, my God, like, I thought this was great. I wanted someone to treat me this way.
Yeah, I guess you want someone to, like, love you so much they hate
you. They hate you. Yeah, like, it's so manipulative. And, like, I almost don't want to read anymore because I'm kind of so grossed out and ashamed of myself for being so obsessed with it. Like, and I was telling Michaela earlier, like, I felt so much shame after reading this one.
No, there's nothing to feel ashamed of. Like, interestingly, and Katie and I had this conversation separately, a lot of the tropes that you see in the Twilight series are actually very commonly explored in just romance novels. The key difference between them is romance novels are geared toward adults who usually have a better idea of what a healthy relationship would look like.
They kind of realize about something, but they know it's not.
Yeah, they really realize that having, you know, this baron's child out of wedlock or whatever would probably not be a good career move. But, you know.
But they can pretend for a few pages.
Right. Or that you probably won't be able to seduce a playboy and he'll be yours forever. So.
Yeah, but I understand how you feel. It feels like shame, but I feel like a lot of it should probably just be like pity for the poor like small you as a child who is reading this and just because I think a lot of it is that teenagers in general, but specifically teen girls, just really want to be like accepted as they are and appreciated and, you know, be shown love, and it's just a shame looking back that is how people said that you had to get it.
Well, and I think it's also, especially when you are a teenager, you are feeling all the feels very intensely.
Oh, yeah.
So any book that has that romantic intensity that shines through it,
where you're like, yes, I
is going to draw to you because it speaks to you on a level where you are, kind of.
But the important thing to note is that it is an abusive relationship.
Yes.
Even if as an adult you still enjoy the Twilight series, it is very important to note that if a child comes up to you and describes what is happening to the the same way this novel is happening, you say, that is very bad. Leave that person.
So, and I have to throw this out there because it ties into it a little bit, but did any of you guys read 50 Shades of Grey or try it?
I read the first two, yeah.
I tried to read it and I couldn't read it with a straight face.
And I had to leave the theater because I laughed too much.
Yeah, and that was why I had to stop the book, was because I kept laughing.
I'm not a good person to ask for that.
But the reason I'm bringing it up is that book is actually an adult version based on Twilight fanfiction.
Yes, based on Twilight,
yeah. What?
Oh, yes. They had to change all of the names and that the fact they were vampires, clearly because it's copyright, but she originally wrote it as fanfiction of Twilight.
Yeah, so it's basically Twilight with BDSM elements in it.
Which is probably why the guy is so cold and removed.
There's BDSM elements in the Twilight series. Yeah, but no, they finally consummate their marriage. But
that's true.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
But both of those, crazy. I think, deal a little bit with
control
and kind of manipulation as part of a relationship, which I think one of our guests brought some.
I know you had them and I don't want to neglect them because you've been so patient. Because
it's important to talk about the actual factual reality of these types of relationships when you talk about books like this.
Yeah, so the numbers I have are from the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And I think before I go over these, it's important to note that these numbers are probably lowballing the reality because these are based on what's reported.
Yeah.
Especially for men. Men very rarely report any kind of domestic violence. But I have here that it says 10.7% of women and 2.1% of men have been stalked by an intimate partner in their lifetime.
Bella is one of them.
Bella is one of them. Can we talk about how he broke into her house and watched her sleep?
Yeah, oh that God. Creeps me out very much.
Yes.
And then he followed her an hour out of town.
Yeah.
But the thing is that Bella would be one of those unreported numbers, though, because she thought it was fine.
She thought it was romantic.
Sweet. Yeah.
And then I have some that's also specifically for teens. 9.4% of high school students report being hit, slapped, or physically hurt on purpose by their boyfriend or girlfriend in the 12 months prior to this survey. Wow. So that's just within that 1 year. That's not even a lifetime report.
That's crazy.
And then I have another one that says 1 in 5 women and nearly 1 in 7 men who have ever experienced any kind of abuse, which includes rape, physical violence, stalking, experienced the first form in a partner between the ages of 11 and 17.
So the first time
they're experiencing this violence and manipulation is in middle school and high school. And it's in the age range
that's targeted.
Mm-hmm. And I can tell, like, from personal experience, I have talked to these children in the emergency room that come in with suicidal ideation or, you know, they come in with a black eye and they tell their parent that they fell off their bike. Well, that's not how you get a black eye, you know?
Yeah.
And they disclose, oh, well, it's my boyfriend, but we've talked it over and we're okay now. And they don't realize that that's not okay.
Right.
And it's not just me. Like, I can't go in there and be like, well, it's not okay. And they're going to change their ways. But
especially when you look at a book like this, where part of the charm, I say that with many question marks, of Edward is that he is so attracted to her that he wants to hurt her. And that is very commonly, like, an excuse in abusive relationships. Like, oh, well, I was just so passionate about it that I couldn't help myself. And it's used as an excuse because it makes the person feel like, well, I can't tell them no because they just told me they loved me a lot. Like, I can't tell them that was bad. And again, as a kid, I loved this book. I was like, this is great. I wish someone loved me so much they wanted to crush things. But as an adult, especially when you go through relationships and you maybe, like, experience some of these, like, toxic relationships, you're like, wait a second. Yeah. You told me this was okay as a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand how that was okay for small children to read.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. And then last one, I promise, nearly half of all women and men in the United States have experienced psychological aggression in an intimate partner. So that's not even, going into the depths of, like, reported abuse, just psychological aggression, which we see all the time in the relationship with Edward and Bella.
Yeah.
Where if she wants to do something that he doesn't like, he gets kind of beefed up, puffs out his chest, or sneers.
Yeah. That just really bothered me when I read that. Sneer. Yeah, I don't know why.
Just sneering at her all the time.
I just feel like there was so much also, like, hate or, like, put down associated with
Yeah, mm-hmm. where it seemed like, I think part of the argument about their relationship is that he is a teenager, but in those moments, it seems like he is an old man who is like, oh, don't do this. You're such a dumb teen. Like,
yeah, because he's got 100 years on her, and there's no way that you're ever going to make up that age gap, ever.
No, maybe if he goes into a coma for 100 years. Yes. But he has 100 and something, like, experienced years, whereas she doesn't. And I feel like in those moments, you can really see that he feels like a parent almost, or like some, like an old, like
he has to protect her.
Yeah, someone looking out for her because she's not smart enough to do it herself. Which,
and he lets her know it too. He lets her know she's
as an adult. I'm like, I was not like someone who wanted to be told what to do. So I don't know how I read that and was like, he's just trying to protect her. Because if someone did that to me, I'd be like, excuse me. Right. I'm not dumb.
So I feel like we also have to talk a little bit about the movies. How did you guys feel like they did with casting? Well, do you think they stayed true to the nature of the story?
I feel like in the first Twilight movie, they took the intensity of the relationship and subdued it.
Yes.
And I don't know if they made that decision because they knew that if they did
if they put it on screen,
if they put it on screen, they'd be like, this is straight up abusive, you know? Yeah. But it definitely didn't give the rush in the movie as it did in the books.
And that's why I didn't watch any of the other movies.
It doesn't help that Kristen Stewart just kind of has a real deadpan, like, affectless
face.
Like,
she has no emotions.
It was very weird because I've seen her in a few things after, and she does have a very, like, subdued acting thing, but it's not as... That movie specifically was just, like, bad, and I don't know if it's because... like, there wasn't a lot to Bella to act out, especially in the first book. She just kind of sat there and went, like, how did I get here? Why is Edward here? Oh, no.
Like, if you rewatch the movie, her mouth is open in, like,
most
scene.
Of the time. It's just shock. Constant shock. Yeah. What's happening?
Yeah. But, I don't even think it's Kristen Stewart's fault. Like you said, it's just how Bella was written.
Yeah.
There's, like, what is she going to give to the character?
Yeah, there's not much other than she's clumsy.
She's just she's just clumsy. She sits there and goes, "I'm normal because I trip." Yeah, I remember the movie being well shot. I remember specifically thinking like, "Oh, this is a cool looking movie." I do remember being weirded out by how pale they made what's his name?
Very pale.
Because his hair was like very dark, but he was like clearly made up to be paler than he is. Which I get, it's a vampire.
Oh,
thing.
Robert Pattinson.
Yes, Robert Pattinson. But I was just like, Robert Pattinson was always already pretty white. Like, I feel like you could have just been like, there you go, a tan vampire at you know, light white.
Yeah.
Because it felt very weird and, like, he was less attractive because he just looked, like, powdery. Someone had just puffed him. Like,
it did help when he had the whole sparkle effect going, too. It really looked like you could just rub your finger and you'd get all these little crystals on yourself. Like,
he's covered in salt crystals or something?
You know, Leslie, after you saying that about 50 Shades, I feel like... I never thought Robert Pattinson was a good pick for Edward. Like, I just didn't think he really, like, embodied what I had envisioned. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the guy from 50 Shades that they cast was more what I had in mind who Edward was, which is very strange now that you say that.
I think some of it was Robert Pattinson at the time was pretty young himself. Yeah. So he couldn't really bring gravitas
to the role.
Well, and I knew him from Harry Potter. So
all I could think of was Cedric.
Cedric, you were so much cuter in Harry Potter.
Like, Cedric would never do this.
Dodge that curse, Cedric.
It definitely feels like maybe the characters... For the 50 Shades of Grey movie were better for the roles of the movie, the book that it was based on.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Which was weird to say, but I liked that. I mean, the movie was fine. Even as a kid, I wasn't, like, super obsessed with it. I was just like, it's good, I guess. Yeah.
I remember the CGI feeling kind of awkward for the wolves and stuff, and but it's been
running,
a long time since I've seen it.
I didn't watch those.
The vampire running was the weirdest thing in the movie, because it was just like his legs were moving at a normal speed, like he was fast walking, but then he's zooming through, and I'm like, his feet aren't even touching the ground.
Because they didn't even film him like sprinting, they just filmed him like jogging.
Didn't even do the silly flash effect or anything.
Yeah, I would prefer a nice, like, oh, look, a little lightning flash, there he is, he's on the other side now, because it makes more sense than awkward slow jogging through a forest. So what's something that you really wanted to bring up? Because since you both reread it, what's something that you were like, I need to talk about this? Either a scene or a particular character that stood out to you that maybe you forgot or the context changed completely?
Okay, so I read it and I forgot, like, that she made other friends that were girls. Like, I flat out forgot about the girlfriends.
I can't even remember her name
Jess?
Now. Jess.
Jess. Jess, yeah.
Her relationship with Jess was even a little manipulative. Like, Jess was like jealous, super judgy.
She was jealous that the other boys were paying Bella attention.
And it's like, is this what friendship's supposed to be? Where you're jealous of your friend if they have a boyfriend or...
Yeah, I think I was very surprised that she had no one else. Like, once Edward actually, like, proclaimed, like, no, I'm actually interested in you, like, she had no one else.
They all disappeared. They just got dropped.
Yeah, like, yeah. She never
even
got
her family members, like, mm-hmm. got dropped.
Yeah.
Another sign of abuse, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not having friends and family after a year in your relationship.
Yeah. I think that's something that kind of caught me off guard, that I was like, I thought they were friends, and then, or they were, but then they just literally disappeared.
Yeah, I forgot that she had friends. I thought that, you know, she was entirely isolated, which is, it becomes, but.
Yeah.
It definitely, like, by the
especially
end.
Especially because, by the time they're together, she's hiding this huge secret, so he's like, well, you have to stay away from people because they'll learn our huge secret. So it's almost this, like, not only does she want to spend all her time with them, but also on top of that, she can't relate to anyone else now because they don't understand this, like, giant thing that she's hiding.
But then there's the Charlie's friend. Oh, Billy. Billy tries to warn Bella and Charlie, like, hey, by the way, like, this probably isn't a very great thing for you. And it's just kind of blown off. And then looking back at it as an adult, I'm like,
Billy
that was
the
right thing to do. Like,
one.
Billy's the only sane one here.
Yeah.
I can't remember because I did not reread the book, but her parents in this. I know
her
she's
parents
living
are
with
divorced
her.
And her she lives
yeah,
with
she
her
lives
father.
With her dad, but I just don't remember him being around much. Is he just very permissive?
So
for
it's in the beginning of the movie, it's made clear that Bella used to see her dad for like a couple weeks in the summer, but she spent almost her entire childhood with her mom.
Yeah.
And then her mom ends up marrying.
Yeah.
And then they end up
traveling
around for baseball.
Yeah.
So she goes and she goes to live with her dad. Well, her dad is not used to having a kid around the house, and now he has a 16, 17 year old who doesn't really want to spend time with her parents anyways. And so he just kind of keeps on with his normal work schedule, and he invites her to stuff quite often, but by the time that he starts to feel comfortable with her around and trying to form that relationship, she's already involved with Edward.
Yeah.
And so her blowing him off, he doesn't notice any difference because that relationship wasn't there in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was trying to remember, like, why he's not like,
Well, there's, like, one time where he notices that she's really giddy, and it's the first night that Edward is that she knows Edward is in the house.
Oh, yeah.
And so she's like giddy and she's like getting excited and he's like, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And
he
she's like,
she's gonna sneak out.
And so she makes this big show of like getting into her pajamas and showering. And she goes upstairs and is like hanging out with Edward in her room. And then her dad comes to check on her. She pretends to be asleep. And like Edward then says like, oh yeah, I've come here almost every night. Like, I'm always here. And that's when you learn that he's around a lot more often. But the next morning, Edward makes this like offhand comment about how her dad had reattached her battery cables. So her dad literally thought she was going to sneak out based on all this giddiness. But that is really the only interaction that they have in the first book about
I know
anything.
He grounds her at some point too, right? I think
later on in the books, maybe. I think that's
I think it's the second book.
I think it's New Moon. Yeah, I think it is a New Moon. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Oh, because she's doing all the crazy stuff.
Riding a motorcycle, just being wild.
Yeah, specifically riding a motorcycle
with a stranger.
Safety gear.
To
get the adrenaline pumping. Yeah, because I couldn't remember that. And I remember just as an adult now being like, well, it feels like you should be more concerned about what's happening to your teen.
Yeah. And I think he just blows it off like, well, I am not used to being around her anyway.
She's
so maybe it's just normal teen behavior.
Yeah.
Like, she's just hanging out with her friends. And she always gives the excuse like, oh, I'm going to go hang out with my real people friends.
Mm-hmm. Jess and them.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the spinoff works. Did you guys know about Life and Death?
Is that the one with the different perspectives?
So basically it's where the genders are reversed.
That's
so
right.
Okay. You have a boy named Beau, and the vampire is named Edith.
So I mean, to be fair, that's a good vampire name.
Is it the same story? Basically, it's just female is the older one.
But where it kind of feels awkward and clunky, I read reviews on it. I never actually read it. Lots of people say it's absolute trash. But where it feels super clunky is there are some very gender-specific scenes in Twilight, like the attempted rape and stuff like that. And it's really, really weird when you reverse the genders on that
stuff. Oh my gosh, when they're in that town, where the guys like gang up on... But okay, Yeah, that would be a little awkward.
Well, is it guys that are ganging up on Bo? Because, I mean, that's still a very
so
real thing.
So, in that particular case, it was a mix of guys and girls, which also...
I imagine it happens. But, yeah, there's a lot of things that literally just reversing it wouldn't make quite as much sense. Yeah. But, you know, it does happen.
But I think it also speaks to what we accept for the gender roles. Like, if you flip that, those same abusive tendencies happen from females acting on males.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not just not reported.
I'm not
saying
it doesn't
happen. I'm sure from readers
happen.
It sounds... Yeah. It probably feels clunky and awkward because you're not used to seeing the female in the, I'm going to say, power position.
Yeah, or
in
the
that
aggressor.
Relationship.
Yeah.
And so it probably does feel pretty awkward to people who don't think about it in that way.
Right. Yeah, especially because it's not something that's, like you said, it's not something that's spoken about. And it's not even something that we see in books and TV shows very often. So reading about it and having this other... like original like concept in your mind would probably also be extra weird because you're just like, this feels wrong,
which is why I never read it, because I was like, how dare you mess with Edward and Bella's story, therefore I am done.
But if anything, that I would be almost more interested to see. I mean, I don't want to see another abusive YA relationship, but I would almost be more interested to see like a female vampire and like a male just because I feel like that would be maybe like a little mix up than normal. Like you said, the power positions are reversed, and I feel like that at least brings new questions to the table. But that would only be if I thought they were actually going to answer the questions and not just be like, it's fine, it's love.
Yeah.
Does anyone in this room feel motivated to read Midnight Sun?
We'll
which
go in
by
a
the
circle.
Way is getting a huge number of glowing reviews on Amazon.
We'll go in a circle. Sabrina.
All right, so I read one Goodreads review before this for Midnight Sun, and I'm not here for it. I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Mainly because I don't want to get caught up in all of that. I already felt a lot of feelings when I read Twilight. Mainly, like I said earlier, shame, you mentioned pity, you know, I don't want to revisit any of those things. I'm just not that impressed with the books.
I think I feel the same. Like, I don't know if I'm going to read Midnight Sun at all. Probably not. Just because I know how angry I got rereading Twilight. Because I'm like, my patients deserve better in the ER. And I feel like it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think I'm just going to pass.
Like, I appreciate what some of the reviews said, that, you know, her matured writing style and, like, putting Edward as a more complex character fleshes it out. But at the same time, sometimes you don't want to see bad people become more complex in the way that they abuse people, because it feels like an excuse almost. I don't think that's what they're aiming for, but that's kind of what it feels like when you already have this position of not really liking the way it was, changing your mind about it. I think a lot of people who are still big fans of Twilight will probably really enjoy it, but I think for some of those where maybe the apple was a little sour, may not really see the same appeal.
I'm actually kind of tempted just to at least pick it up and skim it out of curiosity. It is 680 pages, but her stuff, you know, Twilight, her stuff does read at a clip.
Yes.
She is very masterful at pacing things. So
she really gets
I will say
it.
That for her. From some of the reviews I read, people were struggling with that feeling of nostalgia from when they initially read the series, and that can't ever be replicated when you're reading it as an older reader.
Right.
I never had that nostalgia reading it, so I don't mind reading it in a detached manner. I just kind of want to see, like, if she manages
to fix some of the things.
Well, yeah, especially because one of the reviews I read, probably the same one that you were reading, said that it even gave Bella dimension. And I think that was where I was so frustrated with Bella. She felt like she had very little personality. Mm-hmm. She was just completely codependent.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see it where she actually has opinions.
And, yeah, definitely.
You know, maybe set some boundaries, but that might be expecting too much.
From this series, maybe so.
And I think I realized my problems with the balance in this book is the fact that it is a young adult novel.
Yeah.
Because like you said, in a lot of romance novels, you see that powerful relationship or, you know, that imbalance between powers. And I feel like it's okay because it's geared for adults.
Yes.
And they know better. You know, like 50 Shades of Grey is meant for adults. It's not meant for your 13-year-old 8th grader to read.
Yeah.
Whereas this was geared towards the 7th and 8th graders. Yeah,
and, right.
and they should
like...
not be thinking that this is what they should idolize.
Yeah, right. it feels like they're trying to pass it off as like an introductory to romance, as opposed to like, this is a thing, you don't have to like it, and it's probably not good for you, but you can read it, and it's probably going to be a fun read.
Wow. Yeah.
Because I feel like that's what a lot of us took it as. Like we read it, and we were like, this is what love is.
No, yeah, definitely.
That's it.
You know, you bring that up. I have a question for the former teen librarian and current teen librarian. I read that the Twilight book won a ton of children's awards. Were there just not YA awards? Was there? I'm a little appalled that
I think some of it was just, it was so popular. You know, mm-hmm. it came out on the heels of the popularity of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
We were in that really interesting phase in publishing where everybody was waiting for that next series to get people on a reading high.
Yeah.
So
and
it was
YA
this,
was
and then it was Hunger Games,
like...
and, you know...
Come out.
Yeah, there have been some very notable series, and I think we were so excited just to see people ravenously going after books.
Yeah, that, especially younger people.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, we just didn't have as much variety in YA. I can say that having been a young adult reader at that time.
Yeah.
So having something that attracted so many readers and was standing like really strongly, and also... we don't like it, but there are adults that like it. So it's very possible that some of the people on the committees that read it were just like, checks out, I like
and
it.
And to be honest, one thing that was kind of cool about that series when it was at its peak was that it appealed to both adult and non-adult
yeah.
readers.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually hosted a Twilight Trivia Night when it was at its peak. And it was a blast. I had so many teens and their moms
yeah.
come and join and sign up. So,
yeah,
you know, we had...
Mom,
yeah.
Melanie would have totally been here for this.
We divided everybody up into Team Edward, Team Bella, and Team Jacob. And,
nice.
You know, they competed as a team answering trivia questions.
Yeah.
It was a blast. But one thing that was really telling about it was that it crossed that generational
yes.
gap
yeah.
that you don't see very often.
And it also started... or at least was the herald of the supernatural YA romance trend.
Which, as somebody who loved vampires, I got so irritated. People all assumed that I read lots of vampire romance. And I was like, no.
Just
I want the vampires that actually want to murder people. I don't want this weird
one.
Sexy nonsense.
I want psycho, but vampires.
Exactly.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know about the children's awards. Just maybe the fact that YA wasn't as huge. Like
even
Harry
thinking,
Potter
yeah.
was considered children's. We have it shelved in our children's mm-hmm. section. So that's the only thing I can think is maybe that they hadn't really expanded that level of nuance in their judging for YA books.
And it was hard because I think a lot of times, especially with YA, judges wanted to at least nod toward what teens would actually read and enjoy.
Yes,
you know, before
want.
This stuff came out, it was all very didactic, very dark, very, you know, life in junior high and high school sucks, and we're just going to paint this really gritty picture for you. So it was nice to finally see elements of escapism emerge in
yeah.
stuff for teens.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I will say, we still get, I read a lot of teen books because I'm the teen librarian. We still get books that have those not very good representations, but I also think authors are a lot more cognizant of the fact that the things that they write are being read by young people who are still trying to figure out the world. And if you give them all of these terrible examples about what the world should look like, that might skew their perspective.
Yeah.
I think people are being a lot more careful about the relationships that they are portraying in YA. And if there are bad parts, I think they're more willing to bring that up. I mean, there's a graphic novel called Laura Dean Keeps Breaking Up With Me that is literally about someone who's in a manipulative relationship and almost loses all of their friends because they keep saying, like, oh, don't go back with them, don't go back with them. And they keep doing it, and it's about her, like, overcoming that. So I feel like we've come a long way since
yes.
Twilight
yeah,
came out.
Yeah.
Just PSA, your friends probably know what they're talking about if they say that person's not good for you. So.
Right.
Especially
right.
if more than one says it.
You
yeah.
may not want to hear it at the time.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know what's more fun than dumb boyfriends? Hanging out with your friends. It doesn't happen
yeah.
forever, guys.
Yeah.
Eventually you'll be an adult who has responsibility.
Exactly.
So.
You spend 3 weeks trying to schedule watching one Harry Potter movie.
Yep. You'll have to pretend to make podcasts about books so you can talk to people.
Just hitting a little too close to home, guys.
Ooh. So So yes, does anyone have any closing remarks, or maybe like a pro and a con? Do you want to wish your memories of Twilight well, like a bonfire?
Oh my gosh!
Oh my gosh!
Just throw your last...
cleanse it with sage.
Yes. It was good while it lasted, but I'm glad we're past it.
Rhymed too. Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it. I don't know. I think it was. I mean, the way this all came up. It was through a conversation where I told Katie I was going to reread them.
And then we talked for like 30 minutes.
And then I, as I left feeling like, oh my God, what did I read when I was a kid? You know, and then it started this whole conversation between Michaela and I when she like was rewatching the books.
Since I worked nights, I was up in the middle of the night. I was like, I'm going to rewatch Twilight. And I'm watching this and I'm like, oh my goodness, what did I read as a child? And so I sent her a text and I'm like, have you thought about Twilight recently? It is really messed up.
It was like a couple of days after my conversation with Katie. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's been about a month though. And, yeah. And like just taking those thoughts of like, man, I went back and I looked at something that I really treasured and had a lot of nostalgia towards. And it just doesn't live up to its appeal now. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you've heard a previous podcast of mine, there are some novels that I went back and read, you know, that I read when I was a kid that I did. But yeah, I think I'm good with saying goodbye.
I appreciate what books like this can do for you, and that you get this like perfect snapshot of all of the intense emotions you were experiencing as a kid, because I feel like even talking about it, like I'm like transported back into my like, you know, like just teen body, like full of raging hormones, covered in pimples, just like I want someone to love me unconditionally. And it's just a really intense feeling that I think as an adult you can't really understand, because a lot of it is hormones that make you think like this needs to happen. That needs to happen right now.
And it's life or death.
I will die if this does not happen. And it kind of gives you a glimpse of how that feels. And I think that's really important, even if you can look at it from an adult perspective, because there are teens right now that still feel that way. And being able to understand that to them, it is that important. And it is that big of a deal is really important to being able to understand them. Instead of just being like, well, when you get older, you'll understand it's not that big of a deal. Like, yeah, but the 18 jillion grams of hormones just zooming through their system.
It's like the quickest way to isolate your teenage child is saying, oh, well, it's not actually that way.
Yeah, or you'll like, understand later. Like
when
right
you're older.
Now, you
and that's so frustrating when you're young.
Yeah, because let's be real, like if your kid is freaking out about something, it's probably because it's the first time it's ever happened to them, and that's scary. It doesn't matter what it is, like first fender bender, first I don't know, failed test, like all those things are big firsts and moments where they think that's life or death. You have to remind them that it's not, it's okay.
Exactly. You know, for me, I didn't read it from any place if I'm interested in this. And, you know, interestingly, as librarians, we tell people, hey, life's too short to read books that you don't want to read. But sometimes for me, I really do enjoy picking up what everybody else is reading just so I have that common ground so I can discuss it with people. Even if I am going to be that brat that, you know, from the beginning is just like, no, these characters are all stupid. They should all jump off a cliff. Anyway, even if I'm coming at it from that perspective, it still lets me have enough common ground to have an in-depth conversation with people.
Because if you want to sit down and have important conversations, you got to know where what you're talking about.
Yes, and to me, it's worth that time investment.
Yeah.
So.
And like y'all were saying, I do appreciate that it came off the foothills of Harry Potter to continue that reading pattern for teenagers. That, you know, it went from this, and then we had Hunger Games and Maze Runner and
Divergent.
And Divergent.
Series? Yeah.
Yeah.
And people, I feel like I haven't heard about a big one recently.
Oh, that's because there's so many.
So many?
There are so many. Yes.
Like, the teen section is one of the biggest and most diverse.
And it also tends to be very trend-driven. Like, by the time I stopped, it was all the sick, the terminally ill teen stuff, thanks to The Fault in Our Stars. I don't know what the big trend is right now.
Nothing like fetishizing sick people. Yeah. But yeah, it's very trend-driven, and a lot of it you can really tell literally just looking at the covers, because Twilight inspired 50 Shades of Grey cover a little bit, you know, the black covers with a single object on the front. Mm-hmm. And that became synonymous with, like, this is a sexy book. You can tell because it's a black cover with a single object on the cover. Right. So if you're about to pick one of those up and you don't like romance, put it back down. I think this is the longest podcast
it is
we've ever it recorded.
We knew it was going to be a bit.
we were ready for it and very excited for it.
Thank you so much for reminiscing and sharing a part of your reading development with us.
And also tell us like what you felt about Twilight, because I know a lot of us were ragging on it, but that's just our perspective. And I know a lot of people, it holds a very special place in your heart, and maybe you still enjoy going back to look at it. So we want to see, we want your perspectives too. So
yes,
if you're listening to this, if you made it this far through the podcast and you have, I am assuming you really like Twilight then.
Or if you read Midnight Sun and want to review it, you can be the first one on this podcast.
Yeah. So leave us some comments about that, because I wanna hear what it's like from the other side when you went back to it and you're like, nope,
still love it.
Still love it.
And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.